In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
You're listening to a Frequency Podcast Network production in association with City News.
If you don't live there, and you know one thing about Thunder Bay, Ontario, chances are it's this.
Systemic racism exists in Thunder Bay Police Service at an institutional level.
Because of discrimination and a lack of training, officers didn't take basic investigative steps, even ignored evidence. At least 9 cases were so problematic they should be reinvestigated.
The story you'll hear today about Thunder Bay isn't necessarily new, but it isn't old either. This is one of those cases where a systemic problem is identified, reports are written, recommendations made, and nothing changes. This is a frustrating story to cover for reporters, but it is more than that if you're Indigenous and have any connections to this city. It is heartbreaking. It happens again and again and again, and that's not an exaggeration. Just this month, after years of this, 2 new reports detail more careless, incompetent police work, more deaths that need to be reinvestigated, more missing Indigenous women and girls. Nothing has changed. How long can this go on? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Willow Fiddler is a national news reporter for the Globe and Mail. She covers Northern Ontario, including Thunder Bay. Hi, Willow.
Hi, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
I'm okay, thanks.
Can you first maybe tell us about the most recent public report? We're going to talk about a bunch of reports today, I guess, but the most recent public report that has led to the newest controversy in Thunder Bay.
Right. And it is a bit confusing with the number of reports and investigations and everything that's happening. So you'll have to pardon me if I get things confused, but I'll do my best. So the latest public report is the final report from what is called the Executive Governance Committee. And they reported back to the Office of the Independent Police Review Director on 4 recommendations that came from what was called the Broken Trust Report. And that report was done by the OIPRD back in 2018. And what that report revealed was systemic racism, ingrained in the Thunder Bay Police Service, kind of at all levels. And one of the major findings, recommendations from that report was that 9 death investigations of 9 Indigenous people be reinvestigated because they were so poorly done and negligent. That was one of the major recommendations from the Broken Trust Report. So since then, there's been, the work has been done, the investigative work. There was an investigative team put together that was led by a retired OPP superintendent named Ken Leppert, and he worked with investigators from the Thunder Bay Police Service, as well as other services in the province. So they did the 9 reinvestigations. And so they finally just released their findings from that report, from those reinvestigations,
right,
and reported back to the OIPRD on that. So again, so there's a couple of things in there, because that wasn't the only recommendation from the Broken Trust Report. There was like 44 recommendations total, but the recommendation to reinvestigate the 9 cases was a big one. The other part of that was that investigators had to identify any additional sudden deaths within the Thunder Bay Police Service that they felt should be looked at again or that needed kind of further action. And they came back with 16 more cases So that was also in the public report back to the OIPRD. So that was kind of an astonishing number, but not really surprising for everybody, given the findings from the Broken Trust report in 2018 that just saw how problematic and negligent the police work has been for, particularly for Indigenous people in the city.
Can you just quickly tell me what the OIPRD is?
Yeah, so the it's the Office of the Independent Police Review Director, and they're the Ontario's oversight agency for policing. They handle like public complaints for policing. You know, they hold like hearings and stuff like that for misconduct. They started the Broken Trust report because of a complaint they received from the family of a man named Stacy DeBungie. He was a 40-something-year-old man who was found dead in one of the city rivers back in 2015. The family filed a complaint about how police treated his death. They, you know, they said that they ruled out foul play almost immediately. They kind of brushed it off as just another drunk Indian that rolled into the river. So they took their complaint to the OIPRD, and it was actually that complaint that spurred the Broken Trust report and said, okay, we need to really take a good look at what's happening here with Indigenous people dying in the city.
Yeah, and I know the reports kind of overlap on top of each other and can be confusing. So maybe let's talk just a little bit about the kinds of stuff that's in these reports. I mean, these deaths, what kinds of sudden deaths are we talking about here? And when we talk about them not being investigated fully or really taken care of by the police, what does that mean? Can you give us some examples?
For sure. So I think the in the 9 reinvestigations, you know, and this goes back years and years.
Right.
This is nothing new. So the 9 reinvestigations, 4 of those cases, deaths, were First Nations youth, students who were from the north and in northwestern Ontario, remote fly-in communities, who left their homes and families to attend high school here in Thunder Bay because there's no high schools back up north in the reserves where you can graduate. So a lot of times the students have to leave homes and they come to places like Thunder Bay to go to high school. So between 2000 and 2011, there was a number of deaths of Indigenous people. And during that time, you know, like in the early 2000s, people were noticing, Indigenous communities around here were noticing that. And in 2015, they had a coroner's inquest here in Thunder Bay that was called, it's referred to as, well, a couple names, but the student inquest or the 7 student inquest. And that looked at the deaths of 7 First Nations students who had come from the north to Thunder Bay to attend high school, ended up dying between 2000 and 2011. Mm-hmm. 5 of those 7 students were found in city rivers, which really sounded the alarm bells around here and had so many people worried, had the entire community. Oh, I shouldn't say the entire community because there was a lot of people who weren't concerned about it. And that was kind of the problem. Mm-hmm. So the coroner's inquest looked at those 7 deaths. 4 of them, as I mentioned, were flagged in the Broken Trust report that should have been reinvestigated. The coroner's inquest, the jury came back, I think, and found maybe changes in 3 of the 7 deaths in terms of the cause of manner and cause of death and how they, you know, how they died. But it offered very, very little and to no closure or answers for the families of these students. They were still left after this inquest with a lot of questions and, you know, no further clarity on what happened to their loved one. So I mentioned that the 5 of the 7 were found in city rivers. All of the 7 students, you know, had been drinking. So there was levels of, you know, intoxication. And that was major because in the Broken Trust report, it found that, you know, police biases were such that, and are such that Indigenous deaths are easily dismissed by them if there's, you know, evidence of intoxication, for example. So that was extremely problematic. Just simple things too, because, you know, a lot of these cases, for example, started out as missing persons reports where, you know, days and weeks even went by without, but before police even started searching, any kind of search. That's come up again in the latest report that flags the 60 new cases that it calls for a coroner's inquest or review on missing persons. There was a case, you know, missing persons where, police don't search for, like, it was actually 31 days in this one woman's case before police actually started searching. She was an Indigenous woman with who had been in hospital with mental health issues. And, you know, 31 days to search for a missing person is just, you know, beyond any sort of common sense, right? So it's a lot of those kind of cases in terms of police neglect. And you know, a lot of that was found to, you know, be because of things like bias and racism and all of that.
So that is a public report. And I'm just going to kind of lay it out here to clarify it. That's a public report that wanted 16 old deaths reinvestigated because the investigations may not have been done properly. But there is also, and I promise this is the last report I'm going to ask you about before we talk about the systemic stuff, there is also a private report that we know a little bit about what's inside. And that deals with, I'm glad you mentioned missing Indigenous women a minute ago, because that deals with this. And what does that report say?
Yeah, so I'll just clarify. So the public report has the information of the 16 additional cases, but it doesn't have any of the details on those individual cases themselves.
Right.
Those details are in this second confidential report that's not really so confidential anymore. But
I see.
So that report outlines, kind of provides case summaries of the 16 cases, what investigators found, you know, reasons for further investigation. And then it also flags 25 unsolved cases of missing and murdered Indigenous women that have been with the Thunder Bay Police for quite some time. And this is a list that was submitted by the service to the National Inquiry back in 2017 when they were having the national hearings on that. So that's kind of the official list that would have been put together. And that includes, you know, old cases. I think one of the most well-known ones around here is Sandra Johnson, who, you know, was found killed naked, face down in the snow. Again, in a city waterway. I mean, it was winter, so you know, the water was frozen back in, like, it's been over 25 years for that. And her sister still lives here in the city and does, you know, so much advocacy work to, you know, bring attention to these issues. And I her sister's name's Sharon, and I have so much admiration and respect for that woman, because to think of the things that she must have had to endure during her, you know, during her quest for justice for her sister, I can't imagine.
Well, I did want to ask you about the prevailing feeling around Thunder Bay right now, because as you've kind of detailed, there are reports of this systemic racism going back years, decades, and now there are two new ones. This is clearly still happening. How did the public react? And is anybody surprised?
No one is surprised. It's so frustrating. Like, you know, I laugh out of sheer frustration as someone who's been covering this for 6 years now. Now we're faced with, you know, I just came from a Thunder Bay Police Service board press conference, kind of where they've, you know, again, stated, you know, they're committed to these issues and all of this, acknowledging that, you know, there's little trust. But that's kind of about it. You know, there's really no action beyond those words. And that's frustrating as well.
How does this police service still exist in this current form? I mean, you would have thought one of the past two, three, four reports of this stuff would have at least, if not, you know, a disbanding of the force, but at least some systematic reform.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the city has a lot to do with that. The city council kind of, you know, has been able to keep themselves separated from this. And you know, we reached out recently to some of the city councilors, and many of them are don't want to speak on the issue. I mean, they some of them don't even know what's happening, to be honest, and have no idea, you know, what the latest is or what's going on. And that's really indicative of how the board manages, you know, to stay within, you know, their bubble, as so many people I've talked to say, you know, they operate within this bubble, and where there's little accountability and you know, little transparency, despite these reports, like you say, you know, like the board had this very, you know, the report by former senators Murray Sinclair, and at the time, this was at the same time as the OIPRD Broken Trust report, you know, and there was promises back then of you know, there was the new police chief who was the first female police chief for the service, you know, veteran, 25 years with the service, and then the board picked their first Indigenous chair to lead the board, and she was a woman as well. So, you know, there was kind of like those kind of moves, but she didn't last. And she had said, you know, there was a very clear roadmap with Sinclair's report on what the board could do. And yet, yeah, there's been very little movement on that. Now the board is now coming up with another report. So they've now hired or established an expert panel of individuals they call, you know, experts in policing and community governance and all that. So this panel is well going to assist them in a number of things, I guess, implementing past recommendations, reviewing those, and then coming up with more recommendations on what they need to do.
One more report is going to do this, right? It just takes one more report.
Yeah. Yeah. Just one more. Let's bring in some more experts to get this done. So this is led by former Toronto Police Board Chair, Alok Mukherjee. And then there's several others on there as well. I've spoken to Mr. Mukherjee about, you know, what he thought about the board and reports and everything. And his feeling was that there wasn't enough time given to implement the recommendations from the Sinclair report. And, you know, I think the other part of that is just this whole accountability again thing, like the service and the board are just kind of accountable to themselves, it seems, right? Mm. I mean, they self-report on the recommendations in these reports. So, you know, for example, like the police chief tells the OIPRD that they've completed 80% of the recommendations from the Broken Trust report, and yet there's nothing in place to check the accuracy of that, right? So, I mean, the whole question right. of an issue of oversight too, both at a municipal level and provincially is a big one.
I don't know if you would know the answer to this, but I'm curious about what anyone in the police service on the front lines out there doing the work or not doing the work has to say about these pretty damning reports that keep coming.
Well, yeah, and this is kind of where it gets interesting. So, I mean, the police association, I mean, has not really ever accepted the findings from the Broken Trust report. And I think the challenge in that has been understanding what systemic racism is. They took it quite personally and felt that it was an attack on them as being racist officers. And that's not really what Broken Trust was or said. You know, systemic racism is such a complicated, can be a complicated thing to understand.
Right.
So that's been a little bit difficult, but at the same time, the police association has also, you know, said that they have zero confidence in their police chief too. They've, you know, flagged a number of internal issues. The board and the chief, you know, have been named in several human rights complaints by officers, which I'm told is, kind of unheard of. including a board member. So, you know what, like all around, there's just very little confidence and trust in the leadership of the service and board. And it's just really, it continues for some reason to blow all of our minds who are watching this and working on this and paying attention. How does this continue? You know, and again, we were asking that of the board chair this morning in the press conference. You know, they seem quite confident though that they're just going to continue on, and hopefully this expert panel does it for them, but unlikely.
I can hear in your voice how frustrating it is, and it doesn't seem like there's anything concrete on the horizon. But I mean, maybe just imagine a more optimistic world. What do local Indigenous leaders have to say about this? What would they like to see happen to create meaningful change?
Well, at this point, they're calling for the Thunder Bay Police Service to be dismantled. Not just them, but I mean, we have the lawyers of the families who've been involved in these death investigations calling for, you know, the service to be dismantled. I mean, when there's no more trust and confidence left in an entire community, I mean, people really don't see any other option except for that. But I don't know if that's going to happen. I mean, people, you know, Thunder Bay is a larger municipality, and it's the last one now in Northwestern Ontario, the last municipal police service. Other police services in the province have been dismantled and taken over by the OPP, but most times it's because of costs, right? It's become too costly for that municipality. But it makes me think of, you know, the case in, there was the Kenora Police Service was disbanded, taken over by the OPP back in the earlier 2000s. And that followed kind of similar events surrounding the treatment of Indigenous people, but it was also cost related too. And the city was quite, I think, happy to give it up to the OPP. Whereas in Thunder Bay's case, there's, I don't see that ever happening, not with the current leadership anyways. But similarities with Kenora in terms of how they were investigating deaths of Indigenous people. There was one case in particular of a man named Max Kakagamic who was found beaten to death on the streets of Kenora, and the investigating officers basically botched the investigation and pinned it on an innocent guy. I'm not sure why, to save the actual suspect, but who was related to another officer apparently. But and just a lot of outcry from Indigenous leadership and communities in that area at the time that they needed to go. Yeah, so for, you know, the Indigenous community and leaders, they very much see it as time for the service to go and bring someone in who's maybe not going to be a whole lot better, but from what I hear, it's, you know, the OPP will provide a little bit more transparency and accountability to the community.
Last question, and usually I ask, what comes next? You know, what's the next major step in one of these things? What is next? I guess what I'm hearing from you is not much.
more waiting on reports and investigations. So, I mean, there's, I don't think we mentioned, like, I mean, the Ontario Civilian Police Commission, which is the OCPC, which is kind of the oversight agency for boards and services, that's who hired Senator Sinclair to do his report in 2018. Anyways, they are now again doing another investigation into the service and the leadership. And the OPP is also criminally investigating members of the service at this time, even though they haven't said which members, but based on the number of human rights complaints and the claims and allegations in there against the police chief, it's kind of, we can see where that's headed. So, you know, it's kind of at this point waiting for the powers to be to complete their work and investigations, and again, wait for more reports and recommendations. You know, in the meantime, I think it's important to just continue to keep this story alive and, you know, people aware of what's happening, because it's not funny, but it's kind of people's reactions I get to this story from outside of Thunder Bay and around, like it just kind of blows everybody's minds. And it's like, how does this happen? How does this continue? Like, you don't know how many times I've heard that from people over the years. And
that's literally why we reached out to you, because that was our reaction.
And, you know, I'm asking that as well. But like I said, we have to keep that, because the risk is, you know, that this will get swept under the rug, you know, we'll kind of forget about it, you know, it'll go away eventually. And there's actual lives at risk here and at stake. And those, that hasn't been addressed yet.
Willow, thank you so much for taking the time to walk us through this.
Thanks for having me.
Willow Fidler reporting out of Thunder Bay for the Globe and Mail. That was The Big Story. For more from us, head to thebigstorypodcast.ca, find us on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN, and write to us via email, thebigstorypodcast, all one word, at rci.rogers.com. You guys have responded with so many ideas for stories. We are having, I'm not kidding you, we are having a special listener-only story session next week to figure out which ones we'll cover. We'll try to give you credit for the ideas when we do. You can find The Big Story in any podcast player. And of course, you can ask for it on any smart speaker. Just say, play The Big Story podcast, but don't mix up Alexa and Google. They don't like it. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.